Hey, welcome to another episode of Total Disruption. I am Dr. Jake Clendenning, and on behalf of the Michael Liberzi, we're here with Eric Mangold today. Super stoked to have this conversation. Eric, to say that you are a financial advisor does not feel like that carries nearly enough levity in that introduction. So I guess tell us, you know, good morning for one, and tell us a little bit about, tell us who you are, man. Tell the audience who you're, what you're about.
Yeah, Eric Mangold, founded Argosy Wealth Management in 2022, been an advisor for over 15 years. But yeah, I mean, I like, you know, 80% I think of investors say, financial advisors all say the same stuff. So it's like, all right, well, you know, and they make the same promises. I like to say I'm a little bit different, as they probably all say too. I just want to get to the human level thing on things. You know, I don't want to treat people ever as a dollar sign. And, you know, I don't. And I think that's going to be one of the differentiating factors because, you know, even this year, had a couple situations with clients that retired this year and they were a little freaked out about it. They weren't freaked out about it in terms of how they were going to transition into turning all their savings into income. Like, we worked on that. That was signed, sealed, and delivered. Right. But the freak out part was, I'm not at a job that I was at for 30 years anymore, that I was where everybody felt thought so important. Now I'm not there anymore. And I'm like, how do I do that? You know, and I had another woman who was at a company for 38 years and she got laid off pretty cruelly actually, in September. And she was rightfully like, just her identity was her job, you know, and it changed into that. And so we had a lot of conversations over the past 2 months. And it was, she's like, I really just felt like you are my wingman. She's like, when I got laid off, I made two phone calls. I made a phone call to my sister and then I called you. And you know, I didn't like the fact that her scenario was what it was, but I liked the fact that she relied on me to say, listen, you know, we need to talk. I need my wingman here, my financial wingman.
Yeah. And that really speaks relationship to me. You know, if somebody's going to say the first call, and there were, you know, let's look at that from the end of 2025, you know, end of fiscal year for most businesses, there were an obscene amount of layoffs, just an obscene amount of layoffs that happened. And I saw that largely in public trading companies, that a board of directors said, hey, we got to make more money. And in order to do that, we've got to cut from the bottom, which is so dangerous. I mean, from a business perspective, that is scarcity thinking at its finest. So that's a lot of things that we talk about, but that's completely different bunny hole we could run down. But yeah, I mean,
Jake, you make a relationship. Good point. Yeah, and you make a good point. Yeah, I had another client that 3 weeks ago, she came back from maternity leave, from her 3 month maternity leave, and they laid her off. And, you know, and again, it was she called her husband, and then she called her mom, and then she called me. I was the third phone call, right? I mean, yeah, but you're absolutely right. It can't be just about the dollars.
And I think that you make a good point in that. And I could see where, like, I'll defend the industry a little bit in this space because it is, I could see it being very easy to fall into the trap to make it about the dollars because the role itself, right? Being a financial advisor, being a wealth advisor, you know, being in that space, it is about the dollars. It's about their dollars. So I could see where it'd be easy to fall into that trap.
Yeah.
Right. To where you just, and especially in this remote universe, we've talked about this. We talked about a few episodes back with Quan Borja, that how much the remote part of our industry and many industries is harming us because we're losing that human connection. We're missing that relationship piece. And we start to look at each other as a box to be checked. So I could see where, especially with the remote piece, that it'd be very easy to fall into that trap. So let's talk about that a little bit and then get into the rest of it. But like, what are you doing to make sure you don't fall into that trap? Because it's real simple. Like, we could get on this conversation, you could call me and say, we need to talk about these four investment portfolios. And that's the conversation. It'd be super easy to do that.
But oh, yeah.
What's your strategy? Like, because you've got a plan to do it. Like, and I know that this is true. You've got to intentionally make this happen. Yeah. What are you doing to make that happen?
So I think there's two things. The first thing is that on, you know, with my industry, and my industry does a really bad job in this, is and it's evidenced based upon the questions that new potential clients ask me. They'll say, Eric, what's your minimum? And I don't like that question, not because it's their fault. They've been trained by my industry to ask it. What's your minimum is, what's the minimum dollar amount they need to give to me before we do any work in order for me to give them one-on-one personalized strategy advice? Okay, right out of the gate, you're turning somebody into a dollar sign. They're, how much are they worth? If they're not worth enough, then I, you know, I'm not going to give you one-on-one advice. You got to go somewhere else. Like, come on, like that's not what this is about. Okay. I also work with a lot of physicians, and a lot of the physicians that I work with, I started out when they were residents. They weren't making a heck of a lot of money. There wasn't a lot to do with them at the time, but they needed the advice. They needed more advice of kind of how to stay out of some pitfalls versus how to grow wealth. But then 3, 4, 5 years later, they're very, very good clients because now they have a lot more that we can do. But also they knew I stuck with them when they didn't have anything. You know, and in a competitive landscape, when another advisor may call them up, they're like, yeah, where were you when I was a resident? And I, you know, I didn't have, you know, two dimes to roll together. So
yeah, you know, that's, I agree with you, man. I've had that experience many times of, you know, well, how much money do you have to invest right now? Well, when you've got an extra 50,000, give me a call. Right. Like, and I did not work with them. And it wasn't because we didn't have the money to work with them at the time. It was because they did monetize me. They placed a dollar value on my personal worth. Yeah. And it was pain. And I agree, the industry has done that.
Yep. I mean, it's so bad that that's one of the first questions I get asked. And I said, okay, so just understand that turns you into a dollar sign. I'm not going to do that. So, you know, that's one thing. And then, you know, the other thing with the virtual world, you know, I find that there's definitely some advantages on the virtual world that I'm actually talking to my clients more now because, you know, I over the long term, like you mentioned a little while ago about how much this business is about relationships, and it is, you know, if I was going to go visit a client, it would maybe, you know, drive a half hour, 45 minutes there. We get very personal, and they want to know about my personal life too. So we talk about our families for an hour, maybe have a drink or two. We talk about their portfolio for an hour, and then I drive 30, 45 minutes back home. So all in, one meeting might be 3, 4 hours. But now I can do those meetings where I still get the personal side, but especially for those clients that are busy, especially my physician clients, my clients on Wall Street that are massively busy, you know, we're doing a lot more touch points. Instead of like a 2-hour meeting, we'll go 20, 30 minutes touch point, 20, 30 minutes, 3, 4 times a year, right? And then we'll do the big meeting where we still grab the bottle of wine and a couple of cocktails and have some fun, right? But the touch points are there. There are more touch points there because it's more convenient for them too, right? People that have families, they have kids, a lot of stuff going on, right? It's tough to get everybody together where they can focus on what we have to talk about. With those touch points, maybe we grab it during a lunch period or a lunchtime, you know, 20, 30 minute break here and there. So that's definitely been an advantage because I love having the more touch points.
And it's from a, you know, I'll say this and it's going to sound weird in this space, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like we've heard the quote, the fortune is in the follow-up, but that's what it means is you have to define what fortune is. Now in the follow-up, you're doing all of these extra touch points. You're doing all of the extra meetings. You'll do the big meeting, the small meetings, with the point of being in a relationship with them, with the point of knowing them and where they are at in the moment. Because it's, again, I think in the financial, and I'm basing this on conversations I've had with past advisors of, you know, okay, let's meet on Tuesday, give me your money and tell me what your 50-year goal is. And then I never hear from them again. And my situation changes. My situation is fluid when it comes right down to it. And I'm not alone in that. I think that's very, very true. So the fact that you're reaching out, you know, hey, how I call them the how's your mama calls. And it's the, you know, you're reaching out and saying, hey man, Eric, how you doing today? What's going on? I saw this mountain of layoffs in the fourth quarter. I just wanted to check on you and make sure everything's cool over there. Cause you've got to know, you know, it's so challenging. I'm going to ask you this question, like what seems to be the cutoff point for when you're having these bigger conversations, right? I've noticed a lot of people can create a one-year goal fairly easy. 3 years is a stretch. 5 years starts to get almost impossible. But you ask somebody what my 10, 15, 20, 25 year goal is, and it's crickets. Like they don't know at that point. If they're in a very conventional existence that, you know, I work at a job X amount of years, I retire from the job, you know, if they're in a very, very conventional space, what are you seeing? I mean, are people able in your world, are you able to get them to understand their goal? How frequently are they changing them? Like, walk me down that street.
So there's a couple parts of it in that what I tell people is that I want to know their goals. In conjunction with that, what we're going to do is we're going to build as much wealth as we possibly can. We're going to protect that wealth as best we can from risk and taxes, okay? Because that pot is going to hopefully be able to give them the ability to accomplish those goals, those dreams, that bucket list, right? But because I think sometimes, like you say, if you save for an individual goal, that has some merits, but you can't be laser focused on one goal. You got to be focused on growing that overall wealth pot as big as you can. Because like you said, sometimes those goals are going to change. So as those goals change, you know, they might be going different directions left and right or changing altogether, but that pot is hopefully growing. That overall wealth pot is continuing to grow, continuing to be protected. And, you know, also trying to make sure we're not paying more taxes that we have there. And that's what I really try to focus on, because then it's easier to accomplish those bucket list items. Because if we were just saving for one thing and then the thing changes, well, then what do we do with that kind of wealth? And are we in flux kind of thing? No. Let's just take it from that big pot.
Yep. And that, so like, I've got a friend of mine that wrote a book years ago, The Abundance Effect. And he talked about the difference between being rich and being wealthy, which I never heard it described this way before. I kind of lay it out and get your opinion on this a little bit. What Justin said at the time, and still says it, obviously it's in his book, so it's evergreen, it's always going to be there, was rich can be taken away. I've been rich, and I can speak to this. I've been rich multiple times, and then it was taken away. But I had not attained wealthy, because wealthy is something that is going to be there. So that really resonated with me when he said that. So when I kind of lay that out for you, because you've used that, you know, we want to grow as much wealth as possible. And I get everybody's situation is different between what rich and wealth is going to look like. Where would you draw the line? Where would you categorize it as saying, okay, today you're rich, but we've got to move it just this much further to get you over that line to where now you're building wealth.
I want to say 10 or 12 years ago, there used to be this commercial out on TV that was where people would be walking around on the street and they had this number floating over their head. It was, what's your number? Mm-hmm. And you know, remember those commercials? What's your number?
Yep, the freedom number.
The freedom number, right? And I go back to, let's grow whatever your wealth building potential is. Let's maximize that. But then, you know, rich and healthy, it's happiness, satisfaction, you know, like those two retirees that I have this year, you know, I want to know what they're doing, because the people that I talk to before they retire, I'm like, all right, listen, it's now 3 months into your retirement. The honeymoon of retirement's over. It's Tuesday at 11:30. What are you doing? And Jake, the people that I worry about are the people that tell me I'll figure it out. And I say to them, dead eyes in the face, I'm like, you'll be back to work in 3 months. And the people that have that, pickleball, you know, golf, I've got this club, you know, antiques, going to shows, traveling, see the grandkids. It's the people that are checking things off that bucket list that they always talked about checking off. Now they're able to execute on that plan. That's what I want to see my clients doing, is checking off things in the bucket list. That's what I believe is where wealth really comes in, because now they have this wealth and now they're also not afraid to use it. Because we have this saying in the industry, you don't want to live a just-in-case retirement. What a just-in-case retirement is just you have this big bucket of wealth and you don't use it because you're afraid of using it, because just in case. I need it just in case. Well, just in case of what? Because then you're 95 and you never use it and just goes to your kids anyway, right? So it's really that synergy between what your money's doing for you and your overall happiness.
And I think that speaks a little bit to, I'll say, age demographics. You know, if you're coming out of you know, folks that were, again, very conventional thinking. There was a time to where, you know, 18 years old, you got out of high school, maybe you went to college or you went and you joined the armed services, but by 22, by God, you better have it figured out and you're going to plug in and you're going to work for the next 35, 45 years to where you get your pension. And so much of that then was, you know, that scarcity thinking of, I have just enough money to survive. Like, I don't have to go to work, but now I'm just hanging out at my house and I can make it to the grocery store and I'm living on this fixed income, air quotes kind of thing. It's a mentality that was created out of a generation, and it keeps flowing forward. Like, what are you seeing now? I mean, from a newer generation of people, you know, let's go this way. Like, what age are you seeing people come to you now and saying, all right, I got a plan. This is where I want to get to.
It's definitely earlier. And it's definitely earlier, but there's a lot of suspicion, you know, for the people that tell me that I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to have enough money. I'm never going to have enough saved. I'm never going to do this. The market's rigged against me. You know, I hear that a lot. And, you know, that's probably a conversation for a different day. But, you know, the fact that, you know, the belief that needs to be there. And I think a lot of it is the fear mongering. You know, you can't log in or turn a device on without something being negative, right? And a lot of it's fear mongering. And, you know, when I can get to people and get them into that mentality of no, you're in control of your own destiny when it comes to your own retirement. You bring up a great point, Jake, because, you know, people used to live for their pension and Social Security. You know, whatever happens to Social Security, you know, there might be some changes, but, you know, there's some fear there too. Let's call it concern, right? I think the concerns can be fixed if we get our government working, but that's a different story. But you know, pensions aren't really a thing of the past. You know, people used to work for the same company, like you said, for 35 years, retire at 65, get their pension, get Social Security, maybe have a little nest egg too, but they were dead by 70. You know, now when people are living to 95, 100 years old, right, that retirement's got to last, and pensions aren't a thing of the past. So, you know, companies really aren't doing pensions anymore. So, you know, it's really that fear. How am I going to be able to get there? And, you know, that's part of the program. That's part of the service. That's part of the plan. It's like, okay, let's figure out how we're going to get there. And then let's also execute on that plan, you know, because it's great to draw up a plan, but, you know, if you're not going to execute it, it's just, you know, it's not really worth the writing that it's printed on.
Yeah.
The paper that it's printed on.
The paper is printed on. Yeah. 100%. And the reality is, how many times have we seen, you can't put a number on it, I'm just being speculative, have we seen forced retirement half benefits? You know, after you got like 6 months left till you retire and they cut your pension in half. You know, companies fold. It happens. I mean, that kind of stuff. So that I'm going to be safe. All I got to do is grind this out and I'll have this big fat pension that's going to be there, and maybe Social Security, and I'll be fine. And there's nothing to say that even after the fact that your investment account on that pension piece can't go away. So to just leave it there unattended is, I think it's arrogance, quite honestly. So that's where you've got to have somebody like Eric. You've got to have this person. And I always talk about, it's always a who. That was, you know, my first book was all about that. Jim Rohn talks about that. You know, you're a product of the five people you spend the most time around. How critical this person is in your wealth arsenal, in your personal health arsenal to get you where you want to go. And that's why it's critical. You got to have somebody like Eric doing this. So let's, in this last few minutes, let's talk about where, let's use me. Okay. I'll just pick on me for a minute. Let's assume that I have done nothing. I haven't, but let's assume I've done nothing. I'm 52 years old. I'm going to want to retire and I am going to need to have an income, you know, pay off my house. I'm going to think very conventionally here for a second. I'm going to have my house paid off. I'm going to have my vehicles paid off. I'm in good health. But I'm going to want to do some things. I'm going to want to travel a little bit. I'm going to need $100,000 in income a year. I use that number because for some reason there's a billboard somewhere that says $100,000. I hear a lot of people talk about it. What do I have to start doing today? Like, I need to make the phone call to Eric, but like, really, in the next 15 years, what's my process? How am I going to get to $100,000 a year in retirement?
So what I do in that situation is we talk, and it's great because we're pies on. I'm 52 as well. Put together a retirement plan projection. We're starting at 52. We want to retire at 65 with $100,000 of income. Okay. What are you saving? What do you have? What are your debts? What are your expenses? What are tax rates? Okay. And we're going to show that projection going forward to say age 65. And then I'm going to show you what that can look like if what you're doing today. If you're doing nothing, obviously we got to start doing some things, right? But the projections are based upon arithmetic. And I also use a very conservative rate of return. Okay. So I'm not, making the light in the world on fire with the rates of return, because that makes the projections come out really easy. But I show a conservative projection. And when I show you that, it's the unveiling. Are you happy with how this looks? No or yes, or maybe. If it's yes, then we keep doing what we're doing. Maybe augment some things here and there. If it's no, here are the 3 or 4 or 5 action items that we need to take to make this number a reality, to make that 100,000 a reality. And then it's about executing, okay? The touch points, gotta have the touch points. How are you coming along with these things? Have they been executed upon? And so, because the retirement projections, Jake, it's arithmetic. It's arithmetic, okay? So if they look great, it's not because I'm, tipping the scale one way or the other. It's the math. It's the math and arithmetic showing you what you want to see. And if not, all right, here's some things we can do to make it happen.
Yeah. And here's the deal, guys. And I want everybody to hear this, if you're going to hear anything about it, is it's just a conversation. It's not a judgment piece. Like Eric said, this is math, right? This is just the math of here's where I want to go. Here's where I want to go. So many individuals, so many families, so many people have this, I don't want to talk to somebody else about my finances because it's embarrassing. Maybe I screwed a bunch of things up. You know what? It's okay. Give yourself permission. You need help. You need that Eric Mangold in your pocket. You need that confidant. You need that friend. You need that person that is the second phone call you make to go, hey, I'm just checking in on where, I saw this happen or this happened to me, that you can continue marching down the road to where you're going to be able to live, not just exist. So critically important, but give yourself permission. And I've been here. Like I didn't start talking about my money and my finances until I was in my 40s. I was in my 40s before I was willing to have a conversation with somebody. And guess what happened? It changed. It changed dramatically when I started talking about it and I started being proactive about it and I started paying attention and I started paying attention to my net worth. Like that wasn't even a conversation pre-40. Started paying attention to my net worth, started paying attention to my credit score and how it reflected, directly to that. You got to have those guys, you can have the conversation and give yourself permission. And here's the deal. Find somebody like Eric that's not going to treat you like a number. If you go talk to somebody and you're not feeling it, like this feels icky, it's not that the whole industry is that way. You ran into one individual, one point in space that you didn't jive with. Yeah. Go get in a relationship with somebody that you do. Call 25 people to find one. That's okay. Because if that retires you, and gives you $100,000 in income, man, that's 25 phone calls worth making. There's an investment you need to make. So in the last minute or so, give what's one thing you want to make sure everybody knows, Eric?
Well, I mean, like you said, find somebody who's a trusted advisor. There's times where, and sometimes I'm not everybody's cup of tea, right? Sometimes, it doesn't seem like it's a good fit, and there's times when I refer people to partners of mine because of the fact that I want them to get the help. And that if I'm not a fit, I know one of my partners probably could be, but it's exactly like you said, don't be afraid to go seek out that advice. Right. You and I are 52, we start getting some aches and pains here and there. And every now and again, we're going to go see a doctor, and it's like, we have to go and be a little vulnerable, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because if we're vulnerable, then we can fix, or if nothing needs to be fixed, maybe augment what you already have. But, having that vulnerability, it's okay. And, like I said, like you said, it's not judgment. It's not judgment. It's no. This is a genuine willingness and genuine desire to help.
Beautiful. All right, Eric Mangold, www.emangold.com, E-M-A-N-G-O-L-D.com. Eric's been awesome today. So grateful for your time today. I'm Dr. Jake Clendenning on behalf of the Michael Labersi. It is your turn to disrupt.